The WGTD Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm your host this morning to the sound of suspense and mystery, and to the fear you can hear. A psychiatrist once said that the human brain is like a spider's web. Together, all the strands are strong, but taken one by one, each can easily be broken and the web destroyed. And when Charles David Matthews and his lovely yet somewhat nervous wife, Abigail Catherine, were driving home from downtown Chicago after an evening out at the Ambassador Hotel, they will soon not forget this drive home. For you see, they are driving north on Highway 43 toward Waukegan. It's late. The wicked wind is howling off of Lake Michigan. The road has many dips and turns. And to make this driving even more treacherous, sleet and ice are falling, and it's picking up steam and getting worse. It's 11:15 at night, and the date, is March the 7th, the year 1955. Charles is fighting the wind and sleet as his sleek, dark blue 1955 Cadillac sedan is heading north on Highway 43 toward and into the WGTD Radio Mystery Theater.
Yeah, Abigail, the road's so slick. I'm shocked that I've been able to keep this car on the road without too much sliding about.
Oh, Charles, you know how nervous I get when the weather is so dreadful and we are out on the road. Mother always told me that this was the kind of night to stay inside, in front of a blazing fire, and...
Abigail, really, I must say, I always hear about your mother, especially tonight. I can barely see the road signs.
Charles, must you be so cruel when you speak about my mother? If it weren't for her generosity, we would never be able to live in Waukegan Estates.
Yes, Abigail, I know. You've told me that many times before, and I'm sure I'll be blessed to hear it again in the future. Now, where are we?
Charles, must you drive so fast?
Honey, look ahead. There's a gas station and a diner.
Is it still open? It's late, you know.
Of course I know it's late. It's almost midnight. Hey, honey, have you noticed there aren't many cars on the road tonight?
No. I can hardly see the road, let alone notice any cars coming at us.
Well, I haven't seen a car coming toward us for miles. I just think it's quite strange.
I need some coffee. Right now!
I don't think that's very good for your nerves. And we both know how you get when you get really nervous.
No need to be sarcastic, Charles. I do wish to stay awake so I can see how many cars are on the road, in case you ask me again.
Yes, dear. We'll stop. Now, here's the diner.
Our mystery science fiction drama this morning, Highway 43. The Ray Bradbury Waukegan Mystery was written especially for the WGTD Radio Mystery Theater by Stephen Brown and Michael Ulstrup, and it's directed by Ryan Farrell. And our stars are from the 91.1 Players. I'll be back shortly with our mystery story this morning after these important words from our announcer.
Welcome to the WGTD Radio Theater. This is program number 32 in our continuing series of original radio productions. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of O'Connor, Dumais, Aaliyah, and McTernan, and the Agape Chiropractic Center, located in Lake Villa, Illinois. And now, here's our storyteller with more about today's mystery theater story, Highway 43, the Ray Bradbury Waukegan Mystery.
When we last left Charles and Abigail, they were driving north on Highway 43 in a big blue Cadillac sedan, heading home, or so they thought.
Look, Abigail, there's the diner at the top of the hill.
I know it's probably crazy, but I really do need that cup of coffee.
Well, here it is, the Highway 43 Diner, made to order.
Listen.
That's my favorite song.
Yes, I know.
Earth Angel, the Penguins.
Funny.
What is?
That your favorite song would be playing?
Well, everybody plays that song. It's number one right now.
Now, if they played The Great Pretender, I'd begin to wonder. Let's get a table.
Okay. Would you like a table?
Yes, thank you.
You can sit over there by the window.
Thanks.
I do believe that many things will be happening this year. Don't you agree, Sheriff Weingand?
Miss McCutcheon, you always seem to know all of the secrets long before anyone else.
I wouldn't necessarily call them secrets. Perhaps just events, pieces of time, floating above all the rest, just like how Ray Bradbury writes.
Perhaps, Doysan, perhaps.
Now, that's much better, isn't it, Abigail?
What did you say?
I said, isn't The Great Pretender much better? Especially at this hour.
Yes, of course it is, but...
But what?
How do you know my name?
Wait. Ray Bradbury? Did you say Ray Douglas Bradbury?
Yes. Son of Leonard Spaulding and Esther Marie Modberg Bradbury. Born August 22nd, 1920.
Yes, in Waukegan, Illinois.
How did you know my name?
Because I heard your husband, Charles, call it out as you came into the diner.
Why, of course. That's how she knew it, Abigail. Really, now.
I don't understand why President Eisenhower gave such a speech at the United Nations.
Francine, I think he probably knew what the Soviets were up to. Don't you?
Maybe. But something else is bothering me.
What?
I think she means Sir Winston.
Who are you?
Sheriff. Most people just call me the Stranger. I'm not sure why.
He is right, Sheriff. Mr. Churchill just resigned as Prime Minister.
You mean Eden is now the Prime Minister?
Yes, he is.
I do recall Churchill saying, give us the tools and we'll finish the job. Charles, you also recall that speech, don't you?
Well, yes, of course I do. I actually did my...
You did your doctoral research at Oxford on Sir Winston.
Correct. And Churchill's speech was especially... heartening to the one who believed in a mixing up of the English-speaking democracies. The unspoken alliance was further cemented in August 1941 by the dramatic meeting between Churchill and Roosevelt in Placentia Bay, Newfoundland.
And that produced the Atlantic Charter, a statement of common principles between the United States and Britain.
That's correct. What's your name again?
Just call him the Stranger.
You're correct, Stranger. Quite so.
Charles, must you show off your PhD to everyone?
Only when it's necessary.
We know that, Charles. Even I know that. And I'm only the waitress here at the Highway 43 Diner.
Abigail, honey, it's getting late. After midnight already, we should really be heading home.
Well, at least the highway should be empty.
Mrs. Matthews... you never know about the roads up here in Lake County. They can be awfully dangerous.
Especially some of those turns up near Highway 176. mighty wicked when the roads are iced up. Dr. Matthews?
Yes?
Have you ever read Holler Boken's Dilemma?
No. Should I have read such stories?
If you believe what you read in Imagination Magazine...
Ah, Futuria Fantasia.
No, I said Imagination Magazine.
Well, I know that magazine. I've read it before.
You have?
Of course, haven't you?
No, I would never read such trashy things.
Futuria Fantasia was the sci-fi magazine Bradbury published.
Yes, you are quite correct. I started that in 1939.
Wait, Mr. Bradbury? Ray Douglas Bradbury?
Yes, I am.
How does it happen?
What?
Your ideas, how?
I listen to people like you. How you talk, what you say. Reading books, walking around the room.
Mr. Bradbury, how did you get in here?
Dr. Matthews, I walked in the door. The one over there. Just like you.
Well, before you leave, when did you...
When did I start writing?
Yeah.
When I was 3. I liked magicians. I liked movies. And I saw Lon Chaney.
Lon Chaney?
Yes. All of those scary and mysterious characters. There is one other thing, Dr. Matthews.
What's that?
I saw the H.G. Wells movie, Things to Come. Future history. Wars that last for decades.
Charles, we must be going.
Yes, of course. And, Mr. Bradbury, before I leave, one last question.
What is that?
Well, did you have many friends when you went to high school in Los Angeles?
No, not many.
And why is that?
Because of this craziness. Only one or two, because they also like Jules Verne and H.G. Wells. One last thing, Dr. Matthews.
Yes, what's that?
Do drive safely. The roads are icy and awfully slick, especially near Highway 176. Highway markers 27 and 28. Really bad.
Yes, sir. Well, by all means. And thank you, Mr. Bradbury.
The roads are sure icy now. A lot worse than they were 2 hours ago.
Yes, yes, I know. Just like he said.
Who said?
Mr. Bradbury. Just like he said.
Charles, how long have we been driving?
I don't know, about an hour. Why?
Where are we? It's hard to see the mile markers.
Honey, we're just fine, Abigail. You see, there's a mile marker. There's...
What is it, Charles?
Wait, mile marker 27. Mile marker 27, it's right there. Do you see it? There it is, again.
What do you mean, again?
Abigail, when we left the diner, mile marker 27 was no more than a mile north of the diner. A mile north of the diner. Now, there it is again.
Charles, will you please tell me what's going on? You look as white as a ghost.
Abigail, I need something to drink. A soda, some water, coffee, a very dry martini. I don't care. Something.
Catchy tune. Look, I see some lights just around the corner. Maybe it's a place to stop. Maybe. Maybe it's...
Yes, it is. It's a diner.
Charles, do you see what I see?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do. It's the Highway 43 diner. Again.
I don't understand.
Yeah, neither do I. Let's stop, go in, and just see what's going on.
As Charles and Abigail are shocked at seeing the same Highway 43 diner after driving due north for the last 1 hour and 7 minutes, they will soon find out what's happening. What do you think is going on? Have you figured it out yet? Let's join Abigail and Charles as they walk back into the diner. Yes, the same diner from where they left over an hour ago.
I do recall Churchill saying, "Give us the tools and we'll finish the job." Charles, you also recall that speech, don't you?
Yes, of course I do. Wait a minute. I've heard that before. Something's not right here. Not right at all.
Charles, do you see what I see? Over there, in the corner.
Yes, I do.
I don't understand.
I don't either. But let's make sure.
Hey, look who's back.
I knew they'd be back.
Now, where was I in my story?
Mr. Bradbury, you were talking about being a hybrid writer. What does that mean?
Yes, of course I was. I'm half Lon Chaney in The Hunchback of Notre Dame or The Phantom of the Opera. I'm Charles Dickens on stage, doing Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. So, I'm like Dickens, a combination of things. I'm an actor and writer. All of that.
What about that carnival that came to Waukegan?
Wait, I remember that carnival. Mr. Electrical, right?
Yes. When I was 12 years old, a carnival came to Waukegan, Illinois, and I saw Mr. Electrical being electrocuted.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Yes, Francine, really. You see, Mr. Electrical saw me standing at the edge of the ring and touched me with his electric sword and sent electricity toward me and said, "Live forever."
Mr. Bradbury, I'm new in town. The name is Franklin. Joseph Franklin.
Pleasure to meet you, Joseph.
Did you say live forever?
Yes, I did. Why do you ask?
The carnival. The one out on South Highway 43. Is it still there?
No, it's long gone.
Mr. Bradbury, didn't you write about that in one of your stories?
Abigail, I must have. I've been writing every day for the last 70 years.
Charles, did you notice the ceiling here in the diner?
Not really. Why?
Just look at it. It's totally black, and it has little sparkly speckles all over the place, almost like stars.
Oh, yeah. That's quite ingenious.
I've been watching them, and it almost appears like they're moving.
It's just an illusion, Abigail.
But how?
What look like stars are actually Englo fiber optic strands that receive light from illuminators on one end and transmit the light on the opposite end of the cable.
They do look terribly real.
Abigail, maybe I can help.
How could you help, Doreen?
It's Doris Ann, and let me further explain why the ceiling looks so real. The star side of the fibers is poked through the ceiling material and oriented in a random fashion. Then, constellations and shooting stars can be incorporated using insulated copper-clad fiber optics.
I'll take your word for it. Right, Charles?
Yes, of course. Now, Mr. Bradbury, tell me more about the carnival and Mr. Electrical, please.
I went back to the carnival, and he took me to a tent to meet some other carnival people. And that was the idea for the illustrated man.
Mr. Bradbury, the soul shining out of your eyes is the same light I saw before.
Charles, that entire conversation is giving me the willies.
Abigail, you don't know what the willies are until you've spent more time here at the diner.
I think I'm beginning to understand that more and more.
Mr. Bradbury, it's that time again.
Yes, Mr. Bradbury, we are ready.
Let me move the chairs over here by the fireplace so we can watch the flames while you weave your story for us, Mr. Bradbury.
You know I always enjoy spinning a yarn for all of you.
Charles, must we?
Look, I have to hear this story. After all we've been through, please, honey, give me this one special treat.
Very well.
Uh,
On a dark and stormy night, an unnamed writer of fantasy and science fiction is visited by a terrified actress friend. She gives him two books, a 1920s telephone book and a personal address book.
This story sounds vaguely familiar to me.
Really?
Most of the people she knows from the 1920s are dead, and many of the names in the address book are circled in red. Her name is among them.
It's a fascinating story. You know, it's interesting that you're talking about the past. What about the future? Can you see into the future, Mr. Bradbury?
People are always asking me to predict the future, when all I want to do is prevent it. Better yet, build it. Predicting the future is much too easy, anyway.
Easy?
Well,
that's quite interesting.
You know, you look at the people around you, the street you stand on, the visible air you breathe, and predict more of the same. Who wants more? I want better.
Yes, of course, Mr. Bradbury. We all want better. Charles, we need to go.
Yes, Abigail. Shall we?
Yes, of course, Abigail. You and Charles do need to go. Only then will you truly be able to completely experience Highway 43. As Charles and Abigail are finally heading home, driving north on Highway 43, they are nearing mile marker 27. As they approach that highway marker, Charles remembers what Mr. Bradbury told them.
Look, honey, once again, there's that mile marker. Remember what Mr. Bradbury said?
Do drive safely. The roads are icy and awfully slick, especially near Highway 176, highway markers 27 and 28. Really bad.
Look off to the right there. Honey, there's a car that slid off the road. I hope they're okay.
I'm sure they are, Charles. Why are you stopping?
Look, I just want to see if everyone's okay.
Charles, what was that? Next to the car.
Should I get out of the car and look?
No. You never know what's out there.
Just hand me the flashlight. It's in the glove compartment.
Here.
I'll be right back. Keep the headlights on. What the?
What is it?
That car. Look at that car.
What does it all mean, Charles?
What does it all mean? What did they see? Whatever it was, Charles rushes back to the car where Abigail is stunned by what she just saw.
Charles, let's get back on the road. I'm going to keep my eyes closed until we pull into our driveway. Go, now!
Yes, honey, of course. We will, right away, without delay.
As Charles and Abigail continue north on Highway 43, they drive for another 25 minutes. Finally, Charles breaks the silence when he calmly says,
"Oh, at last, here's our exit. Although it's awfully dark on the road. Abigail!
Sorry, Charles. I must have dozed off. He said many things that sometimes confuse me."
"Who said things?"
"Ray Bradbury."
"Honey, you aren't making any sense."
"I don't need to make sense. Why do I need to make sense? Who does make sense nowadays?"
"Well, I guess not many people do, but then..."
"Really, he did say that if you hide your ignorance, no one will hit you and you'll never learn."
"Okay. We shouldn't do that, should we?"
"No, that's a bad thing."
"Abigail, we turn off right up there. Around the bend, on the road, we are almost home."
"Almost home, really? That would be wonderful if true. Let's listen to our two travelers as they are at what they think is the turnoff to their home, the safety of their home, its warmth."
Charles, that's not our road.
I know. But it's quite foggy, so maybe I just happened to...
Charles, where are we?
Oh, my...
Charles? Charles!
Abigail! Must you yell, or should I say scream at me?
Where are we? I don't believe it!
Welcome back. We've been waiting for you.
We can always count on the stranger to welcome our guests.
Thank you for paying such close attention to Charles and Abigail.
You're welcome, Sheriff.
Honey, we're back at this diner. The same diner.
Charles, why are you whispering? They were all expecting us.
Is she right? Were you expecting us to walk into that door again?
Yes, we were. Surprised?
I'm afraid that nothing should surprise Charles and Abigail. Now, where was I? Oh, yes, the Fibonacci numbers are named after Leonardo of Pisa, known as Fibonacci.
What?
The Fibonacci numbers. 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21.
Those numbers are studied as part of number theory and have application in the counting of mathematical objects, such as sets, permutations, and sequences, and to computer science, and even in some of my own writings.
You know, this is all becoming quite confusing. Is this confusing any of you here today?
Can I get anyone, some more coffee?
Yeah, and I'll need a cup. Make it black this time. Abigail?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Anna.
I do think that this story has taken some mighty strange twists and turns. And yet, we are all back in the same place, but a different time.
I just don't understand it.
What don't you understand, Charles?
Well, Joseph, I just don't get it. We were driving north on Highway 43.
North on Highway 43. Okay, so what's strange about that?
Well, we never turned off the road, but continued north.
And we ended up back here at the Highway 43 diner. The same diner where we left from.
I think you are all overreacting just a bit.
Oh, you do, huh? And why is that?
Well, you're back inside this diner. You're having a cup of steaming hot coffee. And it is all nice and toasty in here. What else do you need?
That's right, Abigail. Everything you'll ever need, right here.
Those numbers, they always intrigue me. But then so does Leonardo da Vinci and his code. It's full of the Fibonacci numbers, just like his Mona Lisa.
I don't know anything about his code, but I do know that we've had this conversation before. And I still find it confusing.
Charles, I really don't think you should worry too much about it. Just remember, when you've nothing to lose, you can run any risk you want.
Charles, that Mr. Bradbury may be from Waukegan, but he sounds like he should be living out in Southern California.
Yes, dear, I know.
Well, as Charles and Abigail continue their debate over where Mr. Bradbury lives or should live, the lights in the diner start to dim and take on a misty blue glow. And even though it's still nighttime, all the window curtains are automatically drawn shut. And, oh yes, there is one other thing I should mention, which if I didn't, you wouldn't be able to notice because this is radio and not television. There is only one clock in the diner, and it's right over there on the wall, over the jukebox, which was playing music from the Bee Gees circa 1978, Night Fever, I believe. But the clock, it's moving very fast now. The minute hand is almost flying. A malfunction, or is the time and space continuum becoming totally nonlinear, without controls? Void without any recognizable form. on a greater scale than any of us could ever imagine. And you would think that Mr. Bradbury would be the one who would recite chapter and verse the elements of basic physics or more about space travel. But instead, the stranger is giving a lesson in quantum physics, and he's talking about certain Euclidean space perceptions.
The universe has three dimensions of space and one dimension of time. By combining space and time into a single manifold, physicists have significantly simplified a large number of physical theories, as well as described in a more uniform way the workings of the universe at both the supergalactic and subatomic levels.
I now hear why you're called the Stranger. What you're talking about is very, very strange.
I sort of enjoyed it. In fact, I've always been interested in time travel.
So have I, but I do think it's hardly possible.
Sheriff, I dare say that the only way of discovering the limits of the possible is to venture to a little way past them into the impossible.
And that's a very interesting point of view, young lady.
Anna.
Yeah, well, yes, of course, Anna. Very interesting indeed.
I don't believe any of it, Charles. It's all a bunch of science fiction as far as I'm concerned. Charles, did you notice that by the window curtains they were closed all by themselves a few minutes ago?
No, I didn't notice. You know, I'm sure it's nothing, honey. Nothing at all.
Charles, I think I left my glasses in the car. Could you please go and get them?
Charles, I don't think that's such a good idea.
Why is that, Joseph?
The weather. Yes, the weather has gotten very bad.
It's very bad out there, Charles. The wind is quite strong. I'm afraid the screen door might blow away if you open the heavy wooden door to the outside.
Charles, what's your position on time travel?
Well, I agree with Abigail. This might seem like a subject of science fiction, but it encourages a look of thought, and it in matters of both physical and philosophical constructs.
Charles, that's very astute of you. In fact, a recent paper in Scientific American discussed whether time travel is indeed feasible, and why current physical and philosophical objections don't preclude the possibility of time travel.
I have given such things some thought in the past.
Charles, tell Mr. Bradbury about your paper on paradoxical studies.
Francine, how did you know about that paper? It was at least 15 years ago.
I remember reading about it in the Waukegan News Sun a few years ago.
You're right, Francine, it was.
Tell me about it, Charles.
Well, there's a paradox that occurs if we allow time travel into the past. To put it bluntly, could you go back into the past and prevent your parents from marrying, say, by killing them?
That's very creepy to me.
I sort of like the topic, especially since I'd be asked to solve that crime.
Tell us more, Charles.
Well, there's another paradox called the free lunch paradox that occurs, for example, if you go back to Bach's century and tell him how great he is in our century and show him all the great compositions he is famous for, and Bach then reproduces these compositions note for note, then Bach's music exists without any artistic effort being put into them, which is why it's called a free lunch, so to speak.
I always seem to be saying this, but it's awfully late. We do have church in the morning.
Yeah, well, what time is it?
I don't know. My watch must have fallen off in the car. And the clock that was over the jukebox is gone.
Well, it was there a few minutes ago.
Something very strange is going on here.
Yeah, you're correct, honey. Some very funny things are going on.
Charles, why should these paradoxes rule out travel into the past? According to the authors of that journal article, they don't violate any physical or philosophical principles.
Let me explain this further. Let's think about the role that time plays. Space-time is a four-dimensional construct.
Correct. And a four-dimensional worm, whose ends represent the events of your birth and death, is what your life forms in space-time. An object, seen at any instant, is a three-dimensional cross-section of this worm.
The line along which the object lies, while ignoring its thickness, is that object's world line. At any point, the angle your world line makes with the time axis is a measure of your speed.
Yes, of course it does. And relativity requires that world lines be time-like. Massive objects distort space-time and bend world lines.
Charles?
Do you wish to add to this dissertation?
In fact, I do. They would have all the properties of space and time, but yet they would be corridors of the past. Such a construct is called a closed time-like curve, or CTC. Therefore, by following this construct, we could meet ourselves in the past, or, if the loop were large enough, visit our ancestors.
This is all quite fascinating. Abigail, I didn't know you were such an expert on the space-time continuum.
Actually, I didn't know I was either. Guess I must have read it somewhere.
She must have read it somewhere? That's fascinating, especially since Abigail never reads the Scientific American. Well, now that everyone, or almost everyone, is becoming an expert on quantum physics, we better get back to our story as our time is running out, or should I say, their time is running out. As we return to the Highway 43 diner, Mr. Bradbury is having another cup of coffee and is telling Abigail...
Are you sure you left your glasses in the car?
Of course I'm sure. Why do you ask?
Because they're right in front of you, on your lap.
Well, I'll be. I never saw them there.
Abigail, maybe that's why you should be wearing them.
So, everyone, did we solve the mystery of causality in the sense that Einstein's theory of relativity has broken down?
I believe we have already asked and answered that question, Mr. Bradbury.
I do think we need to make all of the arrangements.
I reckon we do, Mr. Bradbury.
Charles, what are you doing?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out why my watch is doing some very strange things. Hey, Doris, take a look at this.
Interesting.
Charles, what is it?
Well, the hands on my watch are spinning forward in a strange sequence.
Did you forget to wind it properly?
Well, it's self-winding, but I guess it finally died on me.
What did you say, Charles?
I think it finally died. It's gone to a new world, in a different galaxy, and it's self-winding on its own.
Charles, must you always be so ultra-dramatic?
Charles, did you say self-winding and a new world in a different galaxy? Fascinating.
I do think that some off-the-wall discussions about another world and a new galaxy is totally absurd. Don't you agree, Doris?
Yes, I do. And what do you think, Abigail?
Let me tell you what I think about all of this. This whole diner is really starting to get on my nerves.
Then when I tell you about Gliese 581C, something tells me that you will not be very pleased.
You know, I've heard about that planet. Gliese 581C, it's located fairly close to our solar system.
Yes, it is. It was recently confirmed that it is a planet located 20.3 light years away from Earth.
Its mass is estimated to be approximately a third that of the Sun, and it is the 87th closest known star system to the Sun. Observations suggest the star has at least three planets.
Okay, that's all very interesting, but we better get going, even though I really don't even know what time it is.
Why does everything look blue?
Must be the lights.
What do you mean, Sheriff?
It's the soft glow from the blue lights, which helps us all with our optical retina scans.
Look, I really don't know what you mean.
Anna, why don't you explain?
Yes, Commander, I'd be happy to.
Wait, Anna, I don't understand.
Of course you don't, Charles. How in this world could you know?
No, did you say Commander?
Yes, I did.
Why?
Probably because he's the sheriff, and he's in charge, like a commander would be.
Yeah, well, it just seemed natural, or
Charles, I think you're becoming far too obsessed with such petty details. Here, have some more coffee.
Well, where's my cup? I had it right here on the table, and now it's gone.
Charles, you're scaring me.
Abby, you seem to be losing it. Why? I do think you are macro-analyzing everything that's going on.
So, what's your point?
Stargazing the universe.
What did you say, Mr. Bradbury?
Just gazing is certainly an experience, but soon questions arise that beg to be answered.
What kind of questions?
The endless canopy of stars contains surprising variations in luminosity, size, even color. Some stars look bluish, others... Red patterns begin to emerge amongst the millions of shining points. Perhaps a roving satellite or a shooting star will catch the attention of a keen eye. Don't you agree with me, Francine?
Yes. Once they start asking questions, children soon learn that the night sky is not just about twinkling lights, but about history, culture, and stories.
Charles, look! The brightness! It's staggering!
This is not an obsession. This is real.
Oh, my God. The ceiling is moving. It's opening all by itself.
Check in with the sky daily, monthly, seasonally. Do it often and observe what parts of the night sky constantly change and what stays the same. How does this alter our perspective on the universe, Charles?
Well, I don't know. What are my requirements here? Expectations?
Charles, look up. Watch. Learn.
Charles, this is what it's all about.
But what do you mean?
Tell him, Dora-san.
The night sky is brilliant from this boat. The moon is a thin crescent of gold against a purple rim of twilight.
Charles, Sirius appears in the eastern sky, over there, and slowly descends as others flash into view like crackling embers in a campfire.
Charles, we're moving very fast.
I've known that for quite a while, Abigail.
We all have, Charles. Venus poses and then slowly drops behind view as the red glow Mars ascends, followed by Orion's belt and the tiny dipper-shaped star cluster.
And so, Charles and Abigail, as our space-traveling boat gently moves across the sky, all stargazers all around us are nodding in constant approval. I love the music of Philip Glass, don't you?
Yes, of course, Philip Glass. And as our space travelers continue their journey no longer in the Highway 43 diner, but in a hurtling space vehicle, our gaze leaves Orion and slowly scans the celestial sphere. It begins to sink in just how large and beautiful this universe is, and it's getting larger all the time. Even NASA launching its Kepler spacecraft just a day ago, or asteroid 2009 DD45 passing within 48,000 miles of Earth, and you know how many galaxies there are, all of them speeding away from each other as the universe expands in danger of hopelessly hurtling itself into oblivion. And just what do our newly minted space voyagers, Charles and Abigail, think about all of this as they race through space and time?
Abigail, let me prefer this theory for your consideration. The problem of the direction of time arises directly from two contradictory facts. First, the fundamental physical laws are time reversal invariant. In other words, anything that could happen moving forward through time is just as possible moving backwards in time.
Or to put it another way, Charles, through the eyes of physics, there will be no distinction in terms of possibility between what happens in a movie if the film is running forward or backward.
Yes.
I'm oftentimes asked whether I think that science fiction writers like myself have encouraged space travel.
And what's your response to this?
Charles, I answer it succinctly. Yes, indeed, of course we have. We didn't intend to, but that's the way it worked out. In small groups of science fiction fans and writers back in 1937, we used to have meetings in Clinton's cafeteria in downtown L.A.
And what was the purpose of those meetings?
There were students from Caltech who used to come. They were planning to form rocket societies and dreamed about going to the moon. That's how it started. That was the beginning.
Where does it all end, Ray?
Abigail, it never does.
Mr. Bradbury, we're about to rendezvous with our mission control rejoinder.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Sheriff, or more appropriately, Commander, what is our mission?
I think I'll let Mr. Bradbury tell you, in his own words, why we should be going to Mars.
The first stories I wrote when I was 12 were about Mars and landing on Mars. But now it's time to send real people up there, not just machines. We land there and we explore and we build communities. We become the Martians. When I was younger, I thought it would be the end of the century before we landed on the moon. Well, we did it much sooner. I was only 49 years old when we did it. The moon is a good, solid base to build a space travel organization and a community. Then we take off from the moon and we go to Mars.
And thank you, Mr. Bradbury, and also the classical music we heard that you must be waiting for the end of today's story. Well, that's not going to happen. The story continues. The voyage of our Highway 43 diners moves further and further away from us. They are a mere glint in the eyes of space. Let me close by suggesting to each of you that if you gaze into the evening sky tonight and look to the west, you just might see the Highway 43 diner streaking across the sky with Charles and Abigail and everyone else in the diner looking back at you. And in closing, let me say thank you, Ray Bradbury. Thank you for your love of space and space travel. Your chronicles will never end.
This morning we have brought the original story created and written especially for the WGTD Radio Mystery Theater by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup. Ryan Farrell directed a fine group of actors, and they were...
As Dr. Charles David Matthews, I'm Tom Powers.
As Abigail Catherine Matthews, this is Kathy Zulke.
My name is Mike Zelensky, and I was Mr. Ray Bradbury.
This is Glenn Garside, and I play the role of Sheriff Jonathan Wigand.
As Joseph Franklin, I'm Ryan Farrell.
I'm Andrew Potter, and I play the Stranger.
As Doris Ann McCutcheon, I'm Naomi Weissman-Zottler.
I'm Ellen Deutsch. I was Anna, the waitress at the diner, and Francine.
I'm Steve Brown, and I was your narrator this morning.
As always, support for the WGTD Radio Mystery Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of O'Connor, Dumais, Aaliyah, and McTernan, and the Agape Chiropractic Center in Lakeville, Illinois. Be sure to join us on May 16th for another original story. Roy Rogers and Dale Evans meet Matt Dillon and the Lone Ranger. For the WGTD Radio Theater, I'm your announcer, Ryan Farrell.